Welcome to Torat Imecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. This is Amy Horowitz, and today we're studying Yeshayahu Perek Lamed Bet. Perek Lamed Bet opens by describing a king who will bring justice and righteousness back to the Jewish kingdom. Hein letzedek yimloch melech ulesarim lemishpat yasoru. Behold, a king will reign in righteousness over ministers who govern with justice. Who is this righteous king? Abarbanel raises the possibility that Pasuk Aleph is referring to none other than Melech HaMashiach, who will not only rule with righteousness, but will restore a sense of justice and fairness to all of the governors of the world. However, suggests Abarbanel, sticking with the context of the surrounding Prakim and the time period we know to be Yeshayahu's, it makes more sense to identify this king as Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who has already received numerous words of praise by the Navi for his righteousness. The other Mefarshim agree. Malbim explains that Pasuk Aleph is telling us that Chizkiyahu didn't take the throne in order to conquer his enemies and increase Israel's boundaries, but instead to restore tzedek and mishpat to the kingdom of Yehuda. This, says Rashi, is the whole essence of being a king. How will Chizkiyahu successfully achieve this goal? Malbim defines mishpat as the fair enforcement of laws, which Chizkiyahu will accomplish by choosing and training his governors wisely. Tzedek, says the Malbim, is the king's unique power to go lifni mishurat adin and show mercy and compassion in specific situations that call for it. Pasuk Bet continues to praise Chizkiyahu. V'haya ish kamachavei ruach v'seiter zarem kefalgei mayim b'tzayon ketzel sela kaved be'eretz ayefa. The man will be like a hiding place from wind, a shelter from rainstorms, like brooks of water in a desert, like the shade of a massive rock in a tired land. Ibn Ezra explains this to mean that the people of Yehuda will live in safety and security during the reign of Chizkiyahu, like those who are protected from the wind, rain, and heat. Rashi interprets this description of Chizkiyahu as a safe hiding place to mean that many of the 10 tribes sought refuge in Malchut Yehuda once they were expelled from their own land. Abarbanel identifies 3 separate metaphors in Pasuk Bet and explains that each metaphor highlights a unique benefit of Chizkiyahu's kingship. Kamachavei ruach v'seiter zarem, like a shelter from wind and rain. This is a reference to the fact that Malchut Yehuda survived the Assyrian storm in the merit of Chizkiyahu and his righteousness. Kefalgei mayim b'tzayon, like streams of fresh water in the desert. This is a reference to the increased Torah learning the Jewish people were busy with during Chizkiyahu's reign. The Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin relates that Chizkiyahu placed a sword at the entrance of the Beit Midrash and stated that anyone who did not engage in Torah study would be killed by that sword. The Gemara remarks that because of this emphasis that Chizkiyahu placed on learning Torah, upon searching the entire land from Dan to Be'er Sheva, every single citizen of Israel was found to be an expert in even the most complex matters of halacha. Torah is often compared to water. In this case, just like someone who's walking in the desert feels about finding a stream of fresh water to quench his thirst, the Jewish people appreciated the delicious taste and sweet satisfaction of learning Torah at Chizkiyahu's command. Tzel sela kaved be'eretz ayefa, like the shade of a giant rock in a tired land. This is a reference to Chizkiyahu's fairness and justice, as Yeshayahu described in Pasuk Aleph. Abarbanel explains, the shade of a massive rock is superior to the shade of a tree. The leaves of a tree do provide shade, but they also let some of the light and heat filter through. A giant rock casts a huge shadow, providing a huge canopy of shade on a hot and dry day. While other kings' sense of justice was spotty, full of holes like the shade of a leafy tree, Chizkiyahu's fairness was solid, constant, and consistent. Malbim notes that Pasuk Bet contains references to the 4 basic elements of earth, fire, water, and wind. He explains that although Chizkiyahu is only human, this pasuk describes him as a hero, demonstrating his power over all 4 of these elements. He can provide shelter from both wind and water, rain. As a stream of water, he can negate the effects of the hot sun, fire, and like a giant rock, he can protect his subjects from the tired land, meaning dust. Chizkiyahu's epic righteousness will, of course, have an impact on his subjects, the people of Malchut Yehuda. Psukim Gimel and Dalet describe this influence. In Pasuk Gimel, V'lo tishena enei ro'im ve'oznei shomim tikshavna. Then the eyes of those who have sight will not be sealed, and the ears of those who have hearing will listen. Earlier in Sefer Yeshayahu, the Navi admonished the people for closing their eyes and ears to the word of Hashem. Inspired by Chizkiyahu HaMelech, those people will now open their eyes and ears to those words. Ulevav nimharim yavin la da'at ulashon ilgim timaher ledaber tzachot. and the hearts of the hasty will understand and know, and the tongues of mumblers will speak clearly. Along the lines of Pasuk Gimel, Metzudat David explains that the people will no longer hear the words of the Nevi'im as mumbled, stuttered nonsense, but will hear and understand those words easily and clearly. Radak and Abarbanel see something even more in Pasuk Dalet. Whereas before, explains Radak, people didn't take the time to ponder the meaning of the words of Torah, now they will seek to understand those words with depth and clarity. Abarbanel adds, those who formerly acted like ignorant simpletons will now immerse themselves in understanding the deepest secrets of the Torah. This explains the Gemara's statement that Chizkiyahu's kingdom was saved from the hands of Assyria in the merit of the oil that burned in the shuls and Batei Midrash, lighting the lamps so that the people of Malchut Yehuda could engage in Torah study throughout the night. They had so much to learn, so much catching up to do. The words of the Torah and the messages of the Nevi'im are not the only things that will become more clear in the era of Chizkiyahu. Pasuk Hei continues, Lo yikare od linaval nadiv, ulechilai lo ye amer shoa. No more will a villain be called kind, nor will a miser be called noble. Malbim explains that a naval is someone whose evil is obvious and well known, while a chilai is someone who acts nice on the outside but is mean on the inside. Whereas in the past evil was glorified, dignified, and flattered, and a mean person's true nature was ignored, when Chizkiyahu takes the throne, this too will be clarified. Evil will no longer be glorified, and people will be judged for who they really are. No more corruption and misconception about what it means to be evil. Abarbanel emphasizes that this pasuk isn't criticizing those who do evil, but those who ignore that evil and pretend that the villains are wonderful people. The two verbs in Pasuk Hey are both verbs about speech. Lo yikare od lenaval nadiv, ulichilai lo ye amer shoa. People will no longer say that a villain is benevolent or that a miser is noble, not only because they will now recognize the truth, but because this kind of false flattery will no longer have its place. Pasuk Vav, according to the Malbim, continues to enumerate things that will become clear in the time of Chizkiyahu. Someone who does mitzvot simply to make himself look good in the eyes of others or to curry favor will be exposed as a hypocrite. In contrast, V'nadiv nedivot ya'atz v'hu al nedivot yakum. The noble has noble intentions and is constant in noble acts. Ibn Ezra identifies the Nadiv, the noble person in Pasuk Chet, as Chizkiyahu himself. Based on the context of the preceding psukim, this suggests that the people will change for the better under Chizkiyahu's leadership and influence. They will learn to honor those who are truly noble, those who are righteous in intention as well as action. Chizkiyahu HaMelech will lead the people with integrity, creating a culture of honesty and justice. He'll inspire the people to learn more Torah and will thereby save his kingdom from Assyrian invasion. However, as the next few psukim suggest, this will make the people overconfident about their safety, sure that they can never be harmed or conquered. Three times in Psukim Tet through Yud Aleph, the Jewish people are called botchot, confident ones. And in Pasuk Yud, Yeshayahu tries to warn them that this confidence is misplaced. Yamim al shana tirgazna botchot, ki kala batzir osef b'li avo. In little more than a year, you will be troubled, O confident ones, when the vintage is over and no ingathering takes place. What suffering is Yeshayahu predicting for Malchut Yehuda 1 year in the future? They don't end up getting invaded by Assyria, and the conquest of Yerushalayim by Nebuchadnezzar won't happen for another 130-plus years. Rashi explains that this doesn't mean that trouble will arrive at their door 1 year from now. Instead, he explains, year after year, their sins will compound and grow, becoming more serious and more consistent, until the Renaissance period of Chizkiyahu comes to an end and they ultimately face trouble in the form of the Babylonian army. Radak even suggests that the trouble mentioned in this pasuk refers to an event even farther in the future, the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash by the Romans, an event the Jews of Chizkiyahu's time couldn't possibly fathom, as the first Beit HaMikdash still stood strong and proud in Yerushalayim during his time. If the Radak is correct, and Yeshayahu is foretelling the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash in Pasuk Yud Aleph, the Jews have many, many years, Yamim al-Shana, to accrue sins that become progressively more serious. The day will come, says Yeshayahu in Pasuk Yud Bet, that the people of Yerushalayim will have plenty to lament over. Al-Shadayim Sofdim, al-Sdei Chemed, al-Gefen Poriah, lament upon the breasts, for the pleasant fields, for the spreading grapevines. Of course, this pasuk can be taken literally. We'll mourn the invasion of our fields and vineyards, mourn those fields when they're trampled by our enemies, mourn those grapevines when we're exiled. The Midrash gives an alternate explanation. Mourning upon the breasts means we'll mourn the loss of the Sanhedrin, who nurtured and nourished us with the Torah they taught. The pleasant fields are the Beit HaMikdash, which will be plowed under like a field, another reason to mourn. The spreading grapevines are the Jewish people themselves, who will be exiled and lost when Yerushalayim is conquered. The nature of human beings is that when we miss something or someone, we longingly remember every single detail of that object, that place, or that person. This is what Yeshayahu describes in Pasuk Yud Gimel. Al admat ami kotz shamir ta'aleh. We'll mourn the soil itself, which will be overrun with thistles and thorns. Ki al kol batei masos. We'll mourn our houses, now abandoned and covered in weeds. Kiriya aliza. We'll mourn the noise and happy chaos of our once bustling city. But we won't have to mourn forever. In Pasuk Tetvav, Yeshayahu describes our return to our beloved city. Ad ye'are aleinu ruach mimarom, v'haya midbar lekarmel, v'ha karmel la'ya'ar yechashev. Until a spirit from on high is poured out on us, and the wilderness is transformed into farmland, while farmland becomes a forest. Wilderness becomes farmland, farmland becomes forest, the fields that lay bare will become productive, and will then grow so many trees that they'll look like forests. Radak explains this progression metaphorically. The Jews will progress from level to level in God's favor, ultimately returning to Israel and reclaiming their land and their homes. At that time, says Yeshayahu in Psukim Tet Zion and Yod Zion, we will restore the tzedek and mishpat, the justice and righteousness that we enjoyed in the glory days of Chizkiyahu. The effects of this justice and righteousness will be shalom hashket vavetach, peace, tranquility, and security. Malbim explains, even though our fields will be brimming with produce from end to end, trees and crops filling their borders, we will not have disputes with our neighbors over boundaries and property lines. This righteousness, this peacefulness will remain forever. Ad olam, says Yeshayahu. Abarbanel understands this to mean that the righteous acts of the Jewish people, including the literal act of tzedakah, the tzedek mentioned in our pasuk, will earn them a lasting reputation even after their deaths. The people will no longer have to miss their houses as they will live b'nevei shalom uv'mishkenot mivtachim, in peaceful homes and secure dwellings. This sounds incredible, like paradise. Pasuk Yudtet then seems like it's out of place. Uvarad beredet hayar uvashifla tishpal ha'ir. The forests will sink and vanish, even as the city is laid low. Why is Yeshayahu suddenly describing something that sounds so negative? Mitzudat David explains that this pasuk is actually describing something positive. Normally, it's safer and more secure to build a city on a hill or a mountain, harder for your enemies to access. But when we return to Yerushalayim from our years of exile, when God fulfills our Perek's promise of safety and security, we will even build our houses b'shifla, in valleys and low places, confident that we will still be safe. The Perek concludes, Ashreichem zorei al kolmayim mishalchei regel hashor v'hachamor. Happy are you who plant by the water, you who send cattle and donkeys out to pasture. Rashi explains the metaphor. In the days before sprinklers and hoses and underground irrigation systems, planting seeds near water was the best and perhaps only way to ensure the seeds would thrive and flourish. Likewise, says Yeshayahu to the Jewish people, your righteousness will flourish and thrive, and you will now reap the reward. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilui Nishmat, Malka Esther Batzvi Yosef.